Torchwood files have been activated. Enjoy the show.
The Discussing Network presents Discussing Who, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Kyle Jones, and I'm going to start this week by welcoming back Lee Shackelford. Mr. Shackelford,
hey.
How are you?
I'm well. I'm very well indeed, and I'm glad to be talking about this Sherlock Holmes adjacent story.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. Making me wonder and making me ask you, don't let me forget to bring that up, because that's not in my notes.
Oh, yeah, don't you worry.
But you know what is in my notes? Mm. It is in my notes to say, Clarence Brown, Mr. Brown, welcome. How are you?
I'm here. How could I be in your notes as well?
You're just everywhere. That's
bi-locates.
Yeah. You know, maybe you're here. Maybe you're in a photo. Maybe you're in my notes. I don't know you are, but I know you're on this podcast, at least in my mind. And as far as it's in my mind, that's all that matters, right?
Yeah, or else I'll send my fairies to come get you.
All right. Well, before I get any cornier, just what's been going on with you guys in the last week or so can be Doctor Who related or not Doctor Who related. And Clarence, since I'm already with you right now, what about you? What's going on with you?
Oh, man, nothing much. Nothing really to write home about. Just, you know, gearing up for the election season and just living life, man.
Indeed. And Lee, what about you? Anything going on with you?
Same. I would say just living life and trying to just keep soldiering on. I'm still unpacking here, but you know.
How are you liking the new house? Is it
it's
bigger on the inside?
It is bigger on the inside, and we just love it. We have moved onto a street that takes Halloween very seriously. People have, our neighbors have warned us that we will need to buy hundreds of dollars worth of candy.
Really?
And even when we didn't live here, we used to come, with our kids come trick or treat on this street because it's where you go.
You're that neighborhood.
We're that neighborhood. So now it's kind of slowly been dawning on us. Uh-oh, we own a house on this street. So we have gone big on the lawn decorations.
Okay.
And we're bracing for the inevitable night when it all comes together. But
So I have to ask this question. What about Christmas? What about the season of Christmas? Is this the same thing?
Yep. We're going to have to up our game on Christmas too. Although it reminds me of a Dave Berg cartoon from Mad Magazine that I saw many years ago, and it always touched me deeply. There's a family driving along on the street, and each house is more garishly decorated for Christmas than the next, and one after the other, these fantastic neon displays. And then there's one house, and they've got a little nativity scene on the front yard and a sign that says "Peace on Earth." And the family looks at that, and Dad says, I guess they're not very religious.
That's one that makes you think.
Isn't that nice? Yeah.
Yes.
So we may be that house this time.
Interesting.
The quiet nativity.
That is deep.
Love Dave Berg. Yeah.
Yeah. I like things that make you think. And
yes.
This episode that we're about to get into, I think, made me think, maybe?
Certainly parts of it will.
Yes, indeed. So I don't have anything other really going on. I will say that I'm enjoying Agatha All Along, just for no spoilers abound for Agatha All Along. But I am really, 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 really enjoying that. And I see that there is a note from Wingrace in the chat. Wingrace says, do the lights form an arrow pointing next door, ditto?
Yeah, he's saying, I can just say, same as the house next door. Yeah.
Sweet. I like that.
Yes, right. He also says that he tripped over a circle coming in here tonight. So, start looking whatever 72 yards away from you at this point. Mm.
I was thinking that Tasha may have tripped on a circle coming in because that's why she's not here.
Ah, That's true.
Maybe she was like the doctor and kind of
Yep.
But I do know someone that wanted to join us, and I want to give a shout out to him.
Yes.
He was unable to join us, but Larry Irby, who awesome is also on, and he is awesome, but he is also on Discussing Trek. He wanted to join us specifically for this episode, but unfortunately he wasn't able to make it. So just giving a big shout out to Larry, and hopefully you will be able to join us on the other one that you had selected. They're Always Killing Susie.
Ah.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I don't have any other things on my list. I think let's get right into it. And that means I get to say, if you have not seen Small Worlds, put us on pause. Go out, watch the episode, come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers.
Spoilers.
Affirmative.
Spoilers.
Spoilers? What spoilers?
And I killed Sparky too.
Alrighty, the spoiler warning has gone out, and I am back to review Small Worlds. This is the fifth episode of the first series of Torchwood, first airing on BBC Three on the 12th of November, 2006. Clarence Brown, summary view. I'll start with you. What say you? What did you think?
Oh, man. I don't want to be Debbie Downer, but that might follow me for this episode, because I kind of actively hated this episode.
Wow.
Speaking of Donna Boredom, I think this might, for me, I think it might fall into Donna Boredom for me. There was definitely some good points. Awesome getting more of Jack's backstory, but as a whole, it just didn't do it for me.
Interesting. I actually thought this would be one that you might would have liked. All right, Lee Shackelford, what say you?
Trying to in Team Clarence here. It's the things that I remembered about this episode were, for one thing, that it touches on the Cottingley fairies, which we'll come back to, but also that what I remembered about it was about Jack, and this horrible thing of Gwen and Ryan getting their house vandalized. It's funny that those are the things I remember. Apart from that, it's very run of the mill. It's so much like so much of we've just seen a whole lot of stuff like this in the last 20 years. So it just feels like this is just another one, but It didn't break any new ground, I don't think. So
if I'm looking at it from the story structure, and I'm looking at it from what happened in the story, I'm 100% agreeing with you. You know, this was just your run of the mill. I actually was thinking as I was watching it, this is definitely Monster of the Week vibe, you know, of that old, that formula where it's, here's our protagonist and here's Monster of the Week, and this is what it is. That's what I felt. But if I'm looking at it from a tonal shift from how I was describing last week, feeling the actors did a great job, but it just kind of felt flat in some ways, this had a little bit more character development feel, a little bit, not necessarily in the story, but I'm getting this. We start to see a future connection between Ianto and Jack. And on top of that, you just kind of feel like you're getting to know the characters a little bit better. Again, has nothing to do with the plot, but that to me was the saving grace of this story.
Yeah.
So Lee, before I forget it, I just want to go ahead and ask you, tell us about the Sherlock Holmes connection.
They reference early on the Cottingley fairies and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. And Owen says Conan Doyle believed in them regarding fairies. And Tosh says, well, he was gaga at the time. And that's very dismissive. But the Cottingley fairies thing is something that Sherlockians like myself, we do find pretty embarrassing. Conan Doyle, as a famous person, was willing to vouch for the veracity of the isn't dementia. He just really, he did take the death of his son very, very hard. But yeah, Now, in the scene, they go, so that's the Sherlock Holmes connection, is that the creator of Sherlock Holmes also believed in fairies, at least at the end of his life. And he did kind of make a public fool of himself by saying he believed in the Cottingley fairies. But apparently, Torchwood canonizes they are for real. That is a real photo of real fairies.
Yeah.
And one of them was a character in this story.
Mm.
So I don't know. Is that redemption for Conan Doyle? I mean, he was right. It really was a real photograph.
It's funny. Wingrave says if he was in the X-Files, he would have had that picture up. I want to believe.
That's it. That's definitely who he was. And you know, there's one film interview with Conan Doyle that he overlapped with the world of sound film just enough for us to get one good interview with him. And he doesn't want to talk about Sherlock Holmes, but what he wants to talk about is spiritualism. He wants to talk about communicating with the dead.
Mm. So let me ask you both this question. And Clarence, I'll point it to you first. Based on what you were just saying, Lee, do you think sometimes when using him as an example, he is a renowned creator of Sherlock Holmes, he's well known, well respected, and he loses that, as you just said, toward the end, holding on to this fantastical superstition or belief. Do you think that it might be that he's holding on to that in some ways to hold on to the memory of his son? Because if this exists, maybe somewhere out there my son exists. Mm-hmm. Maybe. Clarence, what do you think?
Just to say yes. I mean, I don't know the way to put it. Definitely once you get toward the end of your life or something dramatic happens, that's when a lot of people who maybe never had any religion or spirituality, and this seems like to be his spirituality that Lee's explaining here, that might be what he was navigating to, in a sense, even though it's, you know, not what's commonly believed. It was real to him.
Hmm. Lee, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that happens for a lot of people. I have a friend who I think sincerely believes that every butterfly she sees is someone that she's known who has passed on. Mm-hmm. And is sending her a message. And one of the reasons why I don't smirk at that or, you know, want to pat her on the head or whatever, is that, you know, I think Hamlet was right. There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy. My mother loved redbirds. She had a superstition about cardinals. So her mother had told her that if you blow three kisses at them, you get three wishes. Mm. We've tested that theory and it doesn't seem to work, but it is interesting. But anyway, my mother had this affection for that reason. And so that's how I was raised, was blow kisses at a redbird. After my mother passed, my backyard was suddenly sort of became a nesting ground of cardinals, redbirds. And it hadn't been before. And it was the wrong time of year. It's just, so, you know,
what is the explanation? You can't, but if that gives you peace.
Right. Yeah. That's it. The answer is, I don't know what to make.
And I know this is giving away the end of the story a little bit, but it certainly makes me think a little bit of Jasmine's fate in this episode. I mean, what do we see of what happened to her? Did she just get transmutated? Did she die? What actually happened?
Right.
I guess that's probably one of the best things about this episode was Jack's decision. And I know we're going to get to it. So I don't want to.
Yeah.
But it also brings up the question of, did what they do matter? Or was it already predestined based on timey-wiminess in a way?
Yeah. Yeah, you know. Not only becomes a fairy, she was a fairy 150 years ago.
Years ago.
And when I was thinking about this afternoon, you know, trying to get my head, you know, in gear for this podcast, I was thinking, I think the idea of Torchwood is that they're supposed to be, that each episode is going to say, can they stop the alien threat? You know, can they contain whatever the thing is that's gotten loose, or the creature that's creating mayhem or whatever. And I think this episode is interesting in that the answer is no. In the end, Jack says, nope, you know what? Let her go. Look, just.
Interesting to see how afraid he was of these fairies.
Yeah.
And true. Also, he makes the comment that they've been here longer than we have.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
Real quick before we move on to back to the story, I want to bring up something or just make a mention of something. This is in regards to Conan Doyle and the connection of the fairies. And, you know, we've talked before about our connection to Doctor Who. And as you were describing that story, Lee, I was thinking back to something that happened to me in 1999, which this is totally nothing like the bird were with you, but connecting and how we in our minds connect random things. I remember when the soap opera Another World ended, and I had someone here, you know, or where I was living at the time, watching with me. And so we're sitting down watching it. And at the end, when it goes off, I fall to pieces, literally. I'm talking about not just like, oh, the doctor regenerated, I'm crying a little bit. Yeah. I'm talking about the ugly, wailing, falling to pieces. And the reason for that was this soap opera that was ending was what I had at 2 years old, 3 years old, 4 years old, watched with people in my life that were no longer here. And that ending was an ending, a connection that was going away. So I can see the Conan Doyle reference of trying to want to tie with however fantastical, you know, this was a freaking soap opera, but I fell to pieces.
If I remember right, that was a routine and a safe place. You were watching with your grandmother, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and so it going away, you know, that was still some connection to her that was alive.
Exactly. You know?
And then when it went away, it went away. So, but what's not going away, well, maybe she did, was Jasmine. And I want to ask you guys about Jasmine. What did you think of the character Jasmine? Clarence, point to you first. What did you think of Jasmine? Was she an innocent? Was she a victim? Was she what?
I think she was both. I think she had innocence. That's probably why the fairies wanted her. Of course, once they, and we don't get this part of it explained in the episode exactly, but somehow they latched on to her. They gravitated to her, and sort of like an imaginary friend, she is leaning on these beings as safety, support, and to the point where she's withdrawn from her parents a little bit, and she's bullied in school. So this is kind of her imaginary friend in a sense, and she's put all her trust in them. And you can kind of see how that can go wrong, especially when the being that's manipulating her has so much power. So yeah, it was as where Goodson was a predator in a different sense. It seems like these fairies were somewhat of a predator as well. But who knows? At the end, was it good for her? I don't know. I'm still kind of confused on the whole thing.
She looks happy.
Yeah, yeah. They're so protecting her.
But you say that she was bullied at school. They tried to bully her, but part of her personality as we meet her is that it just doesn't trouble her.
Yeah.
That none of the things that they do, they just sort of bounce right off of her. And her mother says, you know, were they hurting you at school again? And she says, it's all right, Mom. No one can hurt me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just sort of sailing along confident in that. Now, when the strange man tries to pull her into his car, you know, she's got a real struggle on her hands. But by that point, we already know what's going to happen to him.
Yeah.
You know, and I noticed that the episode, the storytelling sets us up so clearly that she's being defended, that she's being protected, that when her stepdad says, no wonder your dad left you when you were a baby, I think, he's dead.
You're good. You're dead. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice knowing you.
Yeah,
you're dead.
Wow.
You're
dead. You know, so you know, it's really good storytelling. I did not notice who wrote this. Is this Chibnall again?
No, it is someone by the name of Peter J. Hammond. It's not a Chibnall.
Not a name I know. No. But directed by Alice Troughton, who we know and who we're always tempted to say, oh, she must be. No. She's not related to Patrick in any way. But but a stalwart director of other Doctor Who's and Torchwoods.
No.
Anyway.
You know, for me, I don't know if she was innocent. But I wish I could have seen a scene of her before, with her before she met the fairies, because, and this is the, I don't know if catch 22 is not the right phrase, but this is always the interesting problem when trying to think of something like this, which is, would I, if I had these fairies that would not necessarily do my bidding, but would come and play with me, but ultimately protect me. Would that then, as a child, not knowing and having the maturity that an adult would, or maybe even an adult for that matter, would I be tempted to let that power change me?
Yeah.
But did it?
We don't know what she was like before. Yeah.
And I'm thinking of the situations where someone did this, something to her, something bad happened to him. Now, obviously, the stepdad, he probably shouldn't have died, but he was kind of being an a-hole at the time. And of course, the pedophile guy should have got his comeuppance. But yeah, I think if they would have showed us a more innocent example, I guess that's kind of what they tried to do when she was at the school, when it started things started to go bad at the school. I would probably have less sympathy for her, but the fact that this was happening to people that were being pretty bad to her, they were protecting her. Not unlike a parent, they were protecting her.
Right. Very good point.
Now, the fairies, or I guess it's Jack. Well, I've forgotten who uses the phrase "chosen one" first, but we come to understand that Jasmine is their chosen one. And I don't think we ever get an explanation of what the criterion is. What chosen for what? Why is she chosen? What, you know, and that each age has one, and she's this one. She's the current chosen one. It's not because she's particularly. It may not be because she's particularly good or or particularly needy or whatever.
And I may be totally headcanoning this, but I assumed that they needed, in order to maintain their ranks. I don't know that these things die off, but I assumed that they recruited one every generation or whatever that was to maintain their ranks.
Perhaps. Maybe so. Yeah.
So let's switch away from Jasmine and her family, and let's talk about Jack. And Lee, I'll point this one to you first. We get a little bit of insight into Jack's past. And what did you think of his ruse of having the father that went away and he's his father's son and et cetera and so forth? Thoughts?
Yeah. I like the way this is introduced to us in this story. And again, I'd like to know more about this screenwriter, but we know and can trust Alice Troughton. And what we get first is a photograph. And by golly, it's a photograph of Jack. There's no question that that's Jack.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, yeah, that's my dad, you know. And I think the way that works for us in the audience is we're going,
yeah, right.
No, it isn't. We can see how over time that might work for Estelle, but the way we're getting that presented, that's so transparent to us. Now that we've already seen that you can't kill Jack. So now we have not yet established that he's been around for a long, long time already. So we are having to kind of do some mental backflips here to make that work, but it's not too big a stretch. And by the end of the episode, we'll get the whole story. Hats off to John Barrowman, because what he's given is just to be able to sit and tell the story. We don't do a flashback or anything. He just sits down with Gwen and he tells her how he met Estelle and, you know, what happened with the men who are under his command and how he knows about the fairies and and why he's not a fan. We learn an awful lot about Jack in this episode, and he shares that, you'll notice, with Gwen. It's not something he tells the whole team.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like we're building on this idea from the first episode of this really very special relationship between Jack and Gwen. It feels like he'll disclose things to her that he won't tell anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Clarence, what to say you?
It's like Highlander. It's like the not too different from the Doctor, where I see we're starting mm-hmm. to see unfold that Jack has the burden of living, of people he loved or he has loved growing old around him. So in that sense, I think it was that was some of my favorite parts of the episode. Even from the beginning, when he was having bad dreams about what happened to his men, it was just I feel like it was well laid out in this episode, and certainly seeing that he actually really truly loved someone, in Estelle, and you know how he's kind of went on with his life and reconnected with her as somebody else all these years later. Mm-hmm. So I think it was well done in this episode.
You know, I was trying to remember as I was watching this, trying to go back to my headcanon here. I'm using that word again, but going back to my headcanon of 2006, which was trying to figure out what's going on with Jack. And I'm not sure, and I don't want to spoil it, but I'm not sure how he ended up in the past. My brain wants to say he used some device and went back too far or something and then had to live it out. Maybe I may be right, maybe wrong. But I think they did a good job of, if I had never heard of Jack before and I was just watching Torchwood, it would still work in the mystery of, oh no, you're really not your father's son. You are the same person. Or if you know who Jack is like we were saying earlier, oh, right. You know, we know that you were on the space station with the Bad Wolf and blah, 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 blah. What I particularly liked about this was talking about Gwen. She hears his story and then gives it back to him and says, no, that's really you, isn't it? Or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. You know, she doesn't take no for an answer. She uses her wits. She looks at it and says, that's you. Come on, just say it. And Clarence, let me ask you this. Do you think that they're using this as an opportunity to show what the Doctor, you know, what it's like to be the Doctor, to come back and see someone being older, but not having the luxury of getting into the TARDIS and 5 seconds later, you're coming back and they're seeing them older. They're seeing him have to deal with getting around doing the same thing, but being able to live at the same time. Am I making sense?
Yeah, this kind of made me think of how we rag on Clara, we rag on Bill, we rag on other companions that somehow go off into the future and are doctor-like in some ways, live forever. Mm. And it always escapes me that this is Jack too. Jack was a companion of the Doctor that is no longer his companion, that is out gallivanting about the universe, almost immortal. I guess he is immortal. We often forget it, but he's definitely very much in that vein. And I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you absolutely do. No,
it's a really good point, though, because I'm always saying I don't like that. Okay, there's an exception. I like it with Jack.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this, Lee. What makes it work with Jack?
He was first.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just don't want to keep doing it over and over again. And also that the circumstances were so extraordinary.
Yes.
And that it didn't just feel like that was a patched on ending to Parting of the Ways, but that we've got, you know, years later, we're going to come back to this and say, wait a minute, that's, how can that be Captain Jack?
Yeah.
I mean, we saw him get brought back from the dead, but he's also been thousands of years in the future. What? Okay. I'm in. Let's see. I'm going to find out what the explanation for this is. Mm. So.
And, you know, spoilers for season 12 or series 12 of Doctor Who are Chibnall's second series. But compliments just to Chibnall in hindsight with the Graham and Ryan exit of just leaving.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Leaving. That's it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Martha, bye. For that matter.
This was fun, but we've got other things to do. Bye.
Yeah.
You know,
remember Martha Jones did that too.
Yeah.
She's like, okay. I've done this, but
yeah, bye. Yeah.
We are touching back on something from a previous episode of Torchwood too, that, Gwen had noticed that Jack is always at Torchwood. Several people have commented, don't you ever leave? But she says, don't you ever sleep? And he doesn't answer her. And I think, so we're kind of like, that's a good question. If he doesn't have to die, maybe he doesn't have to sleep either. And in this episode, he sleeps and he has nightmares.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of nightmares, the stuff of nightmares, which are bad CGIs that do not age well. what did you guys think? And I'll go ahead and answer this. This was, to me, one of the lowest parts of the episode, was when you were fighting the life-size fairies and the CGI was not very good.
It's not good.
Thoughts, anyone?
Yeah, especially since I thought the pterodactyl in the last episode, although it wasn't great, it's still like I had fun with it. It was sort of, sort of okay. It was okay. And then we get to this. It's just like, oh man, the budget was really low on this part. It almost would have been better if they would have kept them as small fairies and allowed them to turn kind of to demon, you know, small demon fairies. I may have would have liked that a little bit better than the transformation part of it.
I certainly bought them more when they were small than the, but we do want to see that they're, you know, that they can be 6 feet tall and terrifying, and you want to feel that they can do some damage. So I know we had to get to that somehow, and I wouldn't have wanted it to be people in suits in costumes.
Yeah, but so, also that creeps me out when I think Jasmine is one of those now.
Yeah,
yeah, and maybe they get more into that look the longer they remain the fairies or whatever.
So that's her future then.
Yeah.
Yikes. That's even worse. Yeah.
And I don't remember, again, from future episodes of Torchwood, but this was a departure from Alien. You know, this was not an alien artifact or whatever.
Right.
He's referring to these are things that are here, that stay here.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
But still somehow not of this earth.
True. Yeah.
But yeah, it's not our usual science fictional definition of alien.
So let's go up to the end and let's talk really quickly about this ending of letting Jasmine go off with the fairies. Thoughts? I'm not really sure how to answer. I mean, ask a question to that other than this is what happened.
Do we agree, perhaps, is maybe the question, that was the thing to do, right?
Well, do you?
It seems wrong, but our last shot is of her and she looks happy. She looks like this is what she wanted. But Jack's logic is you can't fight these people. And that's really surprising. Like, hey, really? I mean, it certainly looks like this in this moment, but how many times has that happened? And, I mean, we don't expect you to give up like that.
Yeah, he says it's the only way.
Yeah.
It's almost like we're sacrificing the virgin girl to the demon that's coming to the to the village, you know, like really? It's,
right, yeah. I think if it keeps the volcano quiet, yeah.
So let me ask you this. Would it have been a better ending, in your opinion, if the way it was written was they are going to go and rescue the child from the fairies, but they get there for whatever reason, 5 seconds too late. And she's going away and she's waving goodbye and going along happily. And that's the ending, as opposed to the choice, you know, holding the mother back and then letting the child go. Would the other have been better, in your opinion? Or does it matter?
Well, you know, my instinct when you phrase it like that is that's how we do it on Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That we would do our best to try to save this girl from whatever this weird fate is. And it just doesn't work. The forces fighting against us are too strong and they win. Tragic ending. But this is Torchwood. And we're going to have Jack saying, you know what? I know this looks bad, but hey, that's how it is. You know?
Yeah.
Clarence, what do you think?
The only thing I'll add there, or if there's a plan to come back and revisit this in some later episode, which I'm pretty sure there isn't, But I think that could have been cool. If this is a decision we're making now, the sacrifice we're making right now, and we're going to come back to visit it later. But, you know, so much for that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what to come back and visit later, but I do know what I want to come back and visit now is to ask the both of you, are there any other items about this story, about this episode that you want to bring up before we get into our favorite quote?
Well, this does reference straight out to episodes of Classic Who.
Mm.
And I think that had flown past me before. But Jack relates them to the Mara, who we remember from the Fifth Doctor adventures called Kinda and the Snake Dance.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about some problematic special effects. in fact, they actually remastered part of Snake Dance, if I remember right. And it's not a whole lot better than it was before. But anyway, but those are two stories about the kind of supernatural evil entities that come and take people over out of the three-dimensional world. And it reminded me, well, they said, Jack says, that's where the word nightmare comes from. And as somebody who's always interested in etymologies, I said, is it? So I had to go look that up. I mean, surely the Mara, that's a made up word for Doctor Who, right? Well, Mara is actually a really old word, and it is a, it's an obsolete word, but it refers to an evil spirit.
Interesting.
So whoever wrote Kinda and or Snake Dance, they chose that word. Yeah. And then this belief that an evil spirit comes to visit you at night, that is why we call them nightmares. It has nothing to do with horses. It's, it's the night Mara that you're.
Yeah, we got them here nightmares.
Yeah. So it's got nothing to do with horses. Yeah. So, yeah. So Kinda and Snake Dance get checked out here and, name checked. And yeah, that's really about all I got to add to this.
Well, all I'm going to say is I always thought Nightmare was a green, impish-looking demon that fought Doctor Strange. So
yeah.
There you go. All right.
That's his stage name.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
So Wingrace says, is Ruby Sunday a chosen one, and or is Roger Ap Gwilym, I didn't pronounce that correct, and the unnamed unborn child in this episode? Am I overthinking? Definitely.
Yeah, that's not overthinking. That's creativity, man.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Well, what is creative is favorite quotes. Clarence, what's your favorite quote?
Once again, it was kind of hard to pull one out of this episode, but I will pull one from Jack when he is explaining how these things are kind of always here. It reminded me a lot of the doctor when he's explaining things under your bed or any of the other reasons he says stuff is here, but we just don't notice it. And he tells Gwen, no, think dangerous. Think something you can only half see, like a glimpse, like something out of the corner of your eye. With a touch of myth, a touch of the spirit world, a touch of reality all jumbled together. Old moments and memories that are frozen in amongst it. Like debris spinning around a ring planet, tossing, turning, whirling, backwards and forwards through time.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, it's a great speech.
Lee, favorite quote, what say you?
I have the opposite side of that, actually. It's the fairy singing, come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild, with a fairy hand in hand, for the world's more full of weeping than you can understand.
Mm. Mm. How angelic with the weeping.
Yeah, that's right. It sounds like they're saying, come to the good place. This is good.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know.
Well, I will say this about the creatures. These creatures aren't concerned with right or wrong. They just are. And that was my favorite quote.
There you
These
are.
Creatures aren't concerned about right and wrong. They just are.
Hmm.
All right. So favorite scene. I will take this first. My favorite scene was the ending with the girl in the picture. I just thought that was a real cool thing to do. Might be expected, might not, but it was a trope that I enjoy. And I thought it was well done. So
that surprised me. I did not see that coming.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming either. Job. And that creepy grin. Mm-hmm. So I actually, before we move on, let me say this, because I'm going to forget it if I don't. you guys already think that sometimes I can be a horrible person when I don't like something on something that I'm watching. But I promise you, I thought this. I was thinking, why couldn't those things have come and taken the little girl from Boom? Anyway,
there's still time.
Yes, indeed. Favorite scene, Clarence Brown.
I like seeing Goodson get his comeuppance. It was kind of weird. He went in the police station and they didn't know who he was, but apparently he has a record.
They said he had a record, so
right,
yeah. So you know, I thought I'd love seeing him. You know, after he's doing some bad stuff, kind of, you know.
Okay,
I like that he said, I want you to lock me up.
Yeah,
yeah.
So,
real quick, what do you guys think was with the rose petals? What was that just an easy special effect that was cheap, or what was with the rose petals?
Well, fairies in mythology are always connected to plants.
Mm-hmm.
So I that's what I thought, that was sort of a medieval way of thinking about fairies, that if they would use rose petals as a weapon.
Mm.
And if you get enough of them down your throat, they would be.
Yeah, true.
So,
favorite scene, Lee Shackelford.
Oh, Jack reminiscing about meeting Estelle and about their time together. I just love that so much. It's a lovely thing. And once again, you know, hats off to John Barrowman. I completely believe that happened when he told us about it, you know. As outlandish as it is. Yeah.
All right. Favorite scene. Oh, excuse me. We've just finished that final rating. Lee, I'm going to stay with you. Final rating.
Not a favorite episode for me. I'm going to give it 3 rose petals down the throat out of 5.
Mm. All right. Clarence Brown, final rating.
I'm going to give it a 2.5 demon fairies.
I'm going to give it... I'm going to meet you guys in the middle. I'm going to give it 2.75 fairies taking girl from Boom out of 5. So there you go. I really didn't like that little girl. But at least she gets to go see. Shut up, Kyle. So this was fun. I will say this. I enjoyed our conversation about the episode a little bit better than I enjoy watching the episodes. I will say that. All right. Well, guys, thank you as always. And for everyone in the chat, thank you for being here. We appreciate it. Thank you for your time. And as always, we will be back next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.